Thanks for coming. Are we all set in Green Bay, Oshkosh? They're talking as usual. I'm not going to yell at them like I did in front of Professor Lipson. That was embarrassing. Thanks for coming to this special Triple M version of the Lou Jones Breakfast. Please don't not come next week, because we're having another great presentation next week on effective legal writing. And what we've got is a couple of law clerks from the district court, a former state court judge. Laura, my law clerk, is going to have some tips for you after she's talked to the other bankruptcy judges about what are some tips for proposed orders, motions, the kind of things. We're not talking about Supreme Court briefs here. We're going to be talking about the type of writing that you do for the bankruptcy court and how to make those pleadings more effective and hopefully something that you can be proud of and that the judge is willing to grant or sign or rule on. Okay? So please come back next week for that. But thanks for coming to this. This is our special new program. It is rolled out. You can use it now. We're going to be all, you know, we're set to go with it. It is the product of a lot of people's hard work. We had a really great committee that worked on this together with creditors' lawyers, debtors' lawyers, representatives of our clerk's office. Our trustees were both involved, and we're really proud of it, and we're really excited about it, and we hope that folks will give it a shot, and hopefully it will work and help some people stay in their houses and help some creditors get payments on their loans rather than another foreclosed house in Milwaukee. I want to introduce somebody. You know, I have all these great ideas. I in the shower or driving to work or at a blog, and wouldn't it be great if we did this? But I'm just the idea person. The real worker who puts all this together and without whose help this would not be possible is Paula. Paula Bartels is my judicial assistant. Stand up, Paula. She's behind the scenes most of the time, and you talk to her on the phone when you're rescheduling hearings. But I want you to see her and know who she is. If you have questions, you know, we've got Sean. Sean is also here. Sean McDermott from the clerk's office is our clerk's office guy on the front lines for this program. But Paula has been in from the ground floor, and so she's also going to be a point person for you to talk to. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Scott and Nathan to give us some information about it. If you don't mind, I'll sit up here because I want to make sure you get it all right, and if you don't, I've got a little.
Well, good morning, Nathan DeLaterance here. What I think we could do is just jump right to the first form. I think if we walk through the forms, we're all good bankruptcy practitioners. We love our forms, and that'll kind of guide us through that process. First one is that notice and of motion, and motion to participate in the mortgage modification mediation program, or affectionately called the Triple F. So if you want to turn that page 3 in the handout. Right off the bat, I think the initial thing that we have to remember, especially from the debtor side of the table, is that we have to send this to someone. The discussion at many of the sessions that we had is, what if you don't know who the mortgage company is? From the debtor side of the table, have them bring in the last statement. Take your best guess. Look it up on CCAP. There will be some type of a paper trail out there. One of the caveats to this, if you're going to be raising a standing argument later on, this is not a time to kind of lay a trap for your creditor's counsel on the who owns the mortgage routine. So this is right off the bat.
Use something else for that. For those kind of, this program is not to bring up all these challenges to my payment wasn't applied right or my this or that. This program is for somebody who wants a mortgage modification. That's what it's for. You can file an adversary, or you can object to their claim, or you can do all kinds of things. If what you're really about is some of these new theories of challenging the mortgage, this is for somebody who says, I agree with my mortgage, I just can't pay it, I need to modify it, and you have some payments. payments that I can afford. That's what we're talking about here. So please don't try to use this to negotiate the kind of issues that you're mentioning.
Absolutely. And when Scott and I were talking, I think for most of the folks, at least when I look at my clients, people going into this program, they've been in a foreclosure. There's other court history out there. I can at least find the last known counsel and bank that was involved. It's a starting point. And again, good faith, I think, really marks this element. Let's move down into eligibility. I think that that's kind of some of the core aspects of this. First one, has to be a primary residence. No ifs, ands, or buts. Obviously, this is all predicated on a Chapter 13 case. Don't file any Chapter 7s in here. It's not set up for that.
Right, right. We hopefully will, down the road, if it is successful, we will consider expanding into the Chapter 7. But for now, to get it going, we are talking about Chapter 13 only.
Next element, regular income. If they're in a 13, they should have it anyway. I think that goes without saying. But make sure that you've got something there. Unpaid principal balance, $729,750. I think most of our clients are under that cap. But if you've got any of those McMansions out there, keep that in mind. Number four, debtor has mortgage payments that's not affordable due to financial hardship. Again, goes without saying, I think that's most of our typical Chapter 13 clients. But I think it touches on one of the elements of good faith. This isn't, no one's here to game the system. This is if you have a debtor that honestly is having difficulty with their mortgage payment. Probably most of them have attempted a modification, haven't been able to pull it off. Moving into the participation requirements, here's where it gets a little interesting, especially for debtor's counsel. After you file this, post-petition payments have got to be made. No ifs, ands, or buts. We're going to get into some of the trade-offs, mainly relief from stay that's going to occur if this doesn't happen in just a moment. We're kind of breaking it into two categories when we look at this post-petition payment amount. First one is the standard, if you're familiar with loan modifications, the HAMP language, 31% of gross monthly income. The other one that we discussed and is in here is 75% of the current payment or the last mortgage payment that was due, whichever one is less. So then you've got to sit down with your debtors and say, okay, where are you at? What is it? What makes sense when we run these ratios for you? Once you come up with that number, it absolutely has to be made. And that if you move into Section 6, it talks about that. First, modified mortgage payment will be due and must be received by the mortgage creditor no later than the next monthly scheduled date. Take into effect grace periods and those different things, but it's got to be received.
So if they're filing this motion today, May 3rd, okay, so that would be the June payment that has to be made, and if they've got the typical June 1st, but they get the 15-day grace period, we'd be looking at June 15th.
Right.
And they would have to figure out 31% of their gross income, or 75% of their current mortgage payment, whichever is less. The reason that that was put in there is because we worked very closely with and modeled much of this after the Marquette program that's in effect in Milwaukee County, and they're in Waukesha County as well. And what the folks from Marquette told us was that over something like 40% to 45% of their loan modifications that come to their program out of a foreclosure are not qualifying for the HAMP modifications. That's the 31%. And instead, these folks and their mortgage companies are sitting down and working out what they either call an in-house or I don't know, what do they sometimes call them, Ed, or somebody help me out with the language?
Sometimes they just say traditional.
Traditional modification. Anyway, it's not technically the HAMP 31%. So we don't want to foreclose and not have possible relief for 40% of the people. So we came up with this 75%. It is not meant to say that's what's going to be the debtor's eventual modified payment, nor is the 31%. I mean, it's not meant to do that. It's simply meant to, number one, get people in who might not qualify for the HAMP, the 31%, and show to the mortgage creditor that the debtor can make payments. They just can't make the current payment. So that gives you some background on that. So again, lots of the people are going to qualify for the HAMP and do the 31%, but those who don't can still come into the program if they pay 75% of their current payment.
I think one of the things that...
A point for clarification of the payment. It's my understanding that the 31% or the 75% should include escrow.
That's right.
So that should be principal, interest, and escrow.
That's right.
So that, because ultimately those are supposed, the modifications are supposed to include the escrow account.
Right.
So that when you're figuring out that amount, it's not 31% just principal and interest. You have to figure in what the property taxes are for the home and figure that in as
right.
part of
that. I would think that was, the 31% is coming off of gross income. And somebody said, well, where are you going to calculate that from? Well, why wouldn't you use Schedule I? That's your gross income, right? Schedule I. So one, the HAMP type modification would have that debtor taking 31% of that Schedule I number, right? And that's the payment. That's the, if you want to call it an adequate protection payment or a pre-modification payment or whatever you want to call it. That is probably the majority of people are going to do that. They're going to look at Schedule I. They're going to figure out 31%, and that's it. And now you don't pay the current payment, and you don't worry about the arrearage. You're just making that payment until you get to the mediation session. If, for whatever reason, that can't be done, what if, you know, your income, 31% of your income, you can't do it. You've got whatever, child support or things like that is the examples that the folks from Marquette were giving me. You have the option to pay the 75% of your last mortgage payment, but Ed's right, it should also include any escrow. So if escrow isn't included in your mortgage payment, that 75% might be, would it be higher or lower?
I think the payment level stays the same. I think the question goes to whether or not, from the debtor side, your clients can actually amortize and afford the mortgage that they have. Because if, in fact, you can't run it out 40 years or reduce interest enough to get within these levels, chances of getting modification are very poor at that point.
Okay, but we're just talking about the pre-mediation adequate protection payments. And we're just going to stick with this 31% or the 75%, right? Any questions on that? Yeah.
So just to clarify, because I'm not sure that
right.
You don't have to figure something extra for the escrow. That is included in the 31%.
That's included in the 31%. That's your total mortgage payment, principal, interest, taxes, insurance, the 31%.
And we're using the gross income number from Schedule I,
correct.
Not necessarily the 6 months average
no,
from the means test.
Not necessarily.
Because okay. Schedule I is what's supposed to be going forward at that
right.
point.
Right.
One of the issues that we've talked about that was going to be a likely outcome of this is lenders are going to be getting partial payments. We all know what happens when that occurs. They get sent back. That was a concern. I'll turn to Scott. We had some discussion at the last session about ways to try to prevent that from happening.
Well, I guess, again, I would reiterate what Nathan said before. When you serve this motion, you're supposed to serve the creditor or the mortgage servicer directly, but if there was counsel of record in a foreclosure action, serve them too. We all know that sometimes the creditors will split referrals between creditors' attorneys where my office might get the foreclosure and Gray and Associates gets the bankruptcy referral or vice versa. But at least if we were counsel of record in foreclosure and you sent us the motion, we can at least forward it to our client and try to get them involved and say, hey, either hire us to represent you in the bankruptcy or hire one of your other local counsel, because there is a time frame to respond to the motion to mediate, but then that can also potentially deal with the problem of the partial payments coming in that, you know, that'll allow us to prep our client to say they've requested this program, they're going to be sending you a payment that's less than what is contractually due, but you need to accept it. You know, at least until you decide either way if you're going to participate in the program.
I think the fallback from that is if they do get sent back, we all have trust accounts. And that's where if you get into kind of the second part of Section 6 there, What if you don't know if the servicer's changed, you don't know who it's going to be yet, if the payments are coming back, put them in your trust account. This is all predicated on good faith. If the funds go back to the debtors, we all know what happens. Let's make sure they wind up where they need to be. Section 7, they got to make those payments each and every month. No ifs, ands, or buts. They've got to be sent in. Section 8, everything has to be on file. The creditor's going to participate. They need information. The primary place they're going to be looking for that is the case. SOFA, plan, schedules, they all need to be there. The other items, and I'm going to kind of turn to Scott here because we're going to get into some of the details. The lender's going to need specific documentation to process the loan modification. Getting documents and information from clients can be a struggle sometimes. I think a best practice is to get this all up front. It's not a whole lot more, frankly, than what you need to put together a lot of what's going on in your bankruptcy case. But let's have it ready to go so we can try to expedite things. The minimums, though, are going to be signed copies. Stress that, signed copies of the tax returns. They must be signed. If they don't, they're going to get rejected by the lender. They're going to go back to ground. Pay advices, last 60 days, make sure they're there. Make sure that they're in chronological order. Make sure that none of them are missing. You need them for the trustees. I'm looking at Rebecca back there. Yeah, they need them as well.
But you don't need signed copies of tax returns. That is a point to be emphasized. What we found out from Marquette was, why aren't more loans modified with the Marquette program? They work so hard. They've got this great panel of mediators. They're just very dedicated. And the reason is because the debtors can't come up with the documents. So we are, imploring you, and we're telling you right up front, this program is not for somebody who can't come up with documents. And there are, as far as I know, every Monday and Tuesday, I dismiss, a handful of cases because they couldn't supply the trustee with their last year's tax return. This is even worse than that because it's not just the tax return, it's got to be signed. And so, again, if you're sitting across from somebody and thinking, boy, this looks like a candidate for this program, you have to really go over with them how you're not even going to get to mediation without providing these documents. If your schedules and plan and things aren't in, forget it. If you can't come up with tax returns, sorry. But if you can, boy, we really think we're gonna be able to help you.
Section 9, Scott, I'm gonna turn to you. Other documents, you've got a pretty good standard list of things they're going to be looking for.
Correct. And this kind of does tie into the next form, which is the consent to mediate. Assuming the creditor agrees to participate in the mediation, the creditor is supposed to file the consent with the court and then indicate what other documents, in addition to the ones we've already mentioned, are needed to participate. If, as debtor's counsel, you want to start gathering these things ahead of time before you even know if the creditor is going to mediate, you may want to do that. Typical items that are needed by servicers or the investors on these mortgages to process a loan modification. Last 2 months of bank statements, current utility bill. If they have, a lot of debtors, run their own businesses, so in lieu of pay stubs, profit and loss statements, easily for the last 2 to 3 months that show income going in and the various expenses related to the business. A signed and dated IRS 4506T form.
What the heck is that?
that's a consent form to allow the creditor to pull their IRS information.
On the P&L,
which it seems duplicative if you have the tax returns, but honestly, if it's one form that'll get in a low amount, just if the creditor wants it, honestly, just give it to them. I mean, at the end of the day, another form that sometimes comes up is a hardship affidavit, which really shouldn't be too hard for Chapter 13 debtors because, usually a classic situation, I lost my job, that's why I fell behind, now I'm working, so I filed this 13 to get caught up. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be real detailed, but just a hardship affidavit, the creditor's looking for something that basically just explains what happened that caused you to fall behind and what's changed now that you think you're going to be able to make it going forward, almost like a motion to continue to stay on a repeat file. Just an affidavit form. But yeah, those are in addition to.
Did you mention that if they're using child or not child support, but support payments as part of their income, that you might the creditor might want to see that.
Yes, if you have non, I guess, traditional income, you do need to be able to verify that. If it's child support, you know, or Social Security income, you need the benefit statement or something showing what you're getting, or perhaps even if it's child support, maybe the court order saying here's what you're supposed to get. Unemployment benefits typically cannot be used in the equation, but again, in theory, the people in 13 should be working, so that really shouldn't be an issue, but that's income that doesn't qualify. You can have household contributions.
Well,
that
doesn't qualify for HAMP. Right?
Correct. And I
I think
I don't know. I
think one of the new supplemental directives. I'm going to look at Ed on this one. Unemployment
compensation?
Isn't that 10-02? Isn't there a provision that
there
is a cap that?
I don't know. I think they've taken that out because they put the new unemployment program in place. So,
always a new Treasury directive.
Okay.
Help contributions from other parties can be counted, but again, need to be documented. You know, you have a roommate that pays you $500 a month. If you have some kind of written agreement, supply that. Or, again, your bank statements showing that deposit each month of that $500 or copies of the deposited checks or something to document. You know, they can consider the income, but it has to be documented. That's another issue that comes up in mediation is a borrower will say, well, I have this income, but there's nothing on paper to prove it. So then the lender can't rely on it. So you anything that you want the lender to take into consideration on the income side of the equation, they have to document somehow.
I can't stress that enough from the debtor side of the table, especially where their living situation is in flux. They have relatives staying with them as child support, bank statements, and they've got to be there. And the longer paper trail you provide, the smoother the mediation is going to go. Otherwise, you're going to get it kicked back right back out because there's no evidence of it. Mediation fee, moving on to Section 10. Mediation fee, $125. Get it from your debtors up front. Have it in your trust account. We're not going to be jerking around our mediators on this. They need those funds, but they're here to help us.
The creditor's also going to pay that. So yes. This is the first you've heard about this, and you're going, wait a minute, why is the debtor paying for mediation? The creditor's also going to pay. So
each side's putting in $125. The Section 11, I think, is the important thing that you want to bring up to your debtors. It's going to be a personal appearance by their part. They've got to participate in good faith. They're going to get that same reciprocation from the creditor. It's their one chance to actually have a real attorney from the bank to have them, usually on speakerphone, some representative from the lender, to try to see where this is going to go. I think that it's, in one way, a relief for a lot of my clients who've been through it in state court action. It's finally, there's someone there who's handling their file and they feel cared for. I can't stress that it's enough.
We think, the number one benefit to debtors of the program. You're going to get a representative of your mortgage company on the telephone with authority to say, yes, we will modify, or no, we will not modify. We will not jerk you around. We will not say, well, you know, send me another statement, send me another tax thing, send me this and that. Oh, we lost this. The whole idea is to stop the horror stories, cut through the red tape, and get somebody with authority on the phone to say yes or no. That's the goal of this. That's the number one benefit for the debtor, to not have to cut through the red tape and to get somebody who can give them that answer.
Downsides, the automatic stay. Section 12, it's modified so that we're not violating anything. They even talk about loan modifications. That's fine. That's good and wonderful. Section 13 is where it starts to get a little dicier for the debtor side. This is where you've got to educate clients. Otherwise, they're going to be exiting their Chapter 13 in pretty short order. If the modified mortgage payment is not received on time, that's cause for relief. Although all the lender has to do is file an affidavit of default. There's no motion. There's no nothing. Sudden death. They can't make the 31%. I think that there's a strong argument that perhaps 13 is not a good fit for them anyway. This all goes back to the good faith elements. I think we want to tie that in, though, to Section 15, just to skip 14 for a moment. Let's say that you do see an affidavit of default. This isn't a standard 13 matter. Don't be objecting to that, saying, oh, shucks, they forgot. They'd like to send it in now. That's not going to get you a hearing. It's going to get you a stern voice from the bench, I think, on that. It's not what this is designed for. Affidavit, if you're going to object to an affidavit of default, make it a good faith reason. I have documented that they sent in the payments and they got misapplied, that they're sitting in a suspense fund. Try to work it out with creditors' counsel and see what type of solution you can come up with short of creating a rather large ruckus over this. The whole elements are good faith.
Right. If I could just jump in here. This is a voluntary program. We are not requiring anybody to come in and try to mediate a loan modification. It is absolutely, totally within the discretion of the creditor to come and participate. That being said, we tried to induce them and say, why wouldn't you? Under the HAMP regulations, as I understand them, if a debtor is in Chapter 13 and requests a loan modification and meets the qualifications, this under $729,000 and it's a personal residence, the lender is required to evaluate the debtor for the modification. Required. So if that's the case, why not come and do it here and do it through our program? That was the thinking. So as a further inducement, we said, we're going to require the debtor to make these adequate protection payments, to provide all the documents, as an inducement to get you to the table. And if the debtor can't even make the 31%, then we understand that this isn't going to work and they're not going to be able to modify their mortgage. Therefore, you just file an affidavit of default and the standard 8 days or 10 days or whatever it is runs without objection. The stay is lifted and the creditor can go and exercise their state court remedies, including foreclosure. Judge McGarity?
Is that in the original order authorized?
Yes.
Is there a filing fee paid for that list?
No.
Day?
No.
I thought under 1931 we allowed to waive that.
We'll look into that.
Okay.
But the idea is maybe they have to pay a filing fee with their affidavit of default. We'll see. The idea is that we wouldn't have multiple hearings on lifting the automatic stay, a doomsday provision, and and so on, and objecting to the plan, et cetera. The idea was it would be fairly quick and fairly not painless. There will be pain, of course, but if the debtor does not have the regular income to maintain the payments, we're not going to mess around. We're going to do the affidavit of default and have the stay lifted. And we're asking debtors' counsel to seriously think about it before filing an objection to that affidavit of default. We're asking you to tell the debtor you're agreeing that you're not going to file an objection unless there's a really good reason, as Nathan's pointed out.
Judge?
Yep.
Is this program just in Milwaukee?
No. All the Eastern District. All the Eastern District. And we're going to get into in a minute where the mediators are going to be.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
It's just in Chapter 13, though, Chris. Did she get that?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
This doomsday period is going to continue for a period of one year. So if the mediation is successful, that's going to be looming out there. Again, good faith elements, get your debtors educated, get them on track so that we can have a successful case. I'll turn to Scott for any comments on the movement of the mediation conclusion and some of those things.
Again, impress on your clients to make those payments. And again, if they do get rejected, bring them into your office, document it so that you can show that if the creditor tells me that they didn't make the payment and we end up trying to file an affidavit of default, you've got a paper trail that you can go back to and that we can get it resolved and worked out. I think that's the...
So from a timeline standpoint, you're going to file the motion, 21 days, you're going to work with local counsel, you're going to find out who's going to handle the file, you're going to get them the documents that they need. The lender has to fill out the consent to participate in mediation. That's where they're going to let us know what documents they need. We all anticipate that we're going to play nice, we're going to get our clients into this program and make it work. Once that you've provided all of the documents to opposing counsel on this, you need to file the debtor's certification of readiness for mediation. That's the trigger to get a mediation. If you don't do that, it's just going to float out there in limbo. Your client's exposed on the doomsday. Your case is headed nowhere fast. You have everything there, everything ready to go, and then upload that. The clerk from there, my understanding, will schedule the mediation date.
Right.
They'll appoint a mediator.
They'll appoint a mediator.
Schedule the date.
And the mediator will schedule the date. We have a, first let me just back up quickly, because before the readiness for, once the you file a motion, a notice of motion, which is giving the lender notice that you want to go into this program. They have 21 days to object, consent, or do nothing. If they consent, then as we will go on, and that'll be what we are hoping happens. If they object, the court will set a status conference and will ask, why are you objecting? And the lender may say, look, this debtor has been turned down 3 times for a modification. Well, again, the court is not going to force the lender to come to the mediation, is not going to force the lender to participate in the program. If the lender doesn't have a good reason, I mean, I might say to them, do you know what's in it for you? Do you know there's a doomsday on their payments? Do you know that there's going to be a doomsday for a year after they modify? Do you know that you're required to do this to at least look at it, and we're giving you the opportunity on a fairly fast track to do this? I might just ask them why, and maybe it's a matter of education, why they're objecting. But nobody will be forced. If they do truly object and say, we are not going to go into this program, then the bets will be off, and the debtor will have to presumably either dismiss the 13 or do the traditional cure the arrearage in the plan and make the regular payments and blah, 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 and maybe, you know, who knows. If the lender doesn't do anything, they don't object, they don't consent, they don't do anything, in 24 days, the court is going to probably set a status conference and say, what's going on? Why didn't you do anything? Is it a problem with identifying the lender? It will not be to force anyone. There is a program in Rhode Island where they are forcing the lenders to come and do this loss mitigation efforts. That is not what we are modeling after. We are modeling after the Marquette program, which is voluntary, and the program in Florida, which is voluntary. So I just want to say that if you object, lender, or if you do nothing, you'll be coming and explaining yourself, but you will not be forced into this. And the debtor will have that time to figure out what's next, what can I do. If the lender consents, the court is going to enter an order. It's a mediation order. It's a standard order. It will not change from case to case. And that's the other thing to note. All these forms are on the website under information for attorneys. If you go to our website and to the part which says information for attorneys, why do you think we put it there? Enough said. All the forms are there. The forms are required. You should not make up your own motion. You should simply use the one that we've got there. But even if you don't, we will be using our form order. And our form order is going to have all of these requirements, including that the debtor agrees that if the debtor doesn't make the adequate protection payments, there's a doomsday and the affidavit of default can result in the lifting of the stay.
Maybe that's your answer, right? It's a stipulation.
Right.
And then
I knew I had thought of that. Paula. but at any rate, before you get to we're ready for mediation, there will be this order. And maybe that's the, of all the documents to really sit down and parse through and make sure you understand as a debtor's counsel, maybe that's the one to really start with, the order. It's on the website. We're showing it to you. And again, if you go and modify the motion, it's not really going to matter because the order is going to be what governs. So then, after the order gets entered, you get your documents to the lender, to the lender's counsel, and then you're all done. You've gotten your documents in. Now you file the certificate of readiness. And again, thanks to our great people in the clerk's office, we have come up with new events in CM. They should be very simple to use. They shouldn't have to, what do I use for this? Nope, they're all there just for this program. And you'll file this certificate which says, I'm ready, we're ready, we've given all the documents. And again, why did we do that? Because of the Marquette experience, that's what interferes with, slows down, messes up their mediations is the documents. So you're not even going to get a mediator until you give the documents. Well, you might be thinking, this is a way to really just delay things. And we will be tracking it. And again, there's a doomsday on the payments. And so it's in your best interest to get those documents and get this thing on track. So once they file a certificate of readiness, now our clerks are going to go to a panel. We've got a panel of mediators. They're doing training today, by the way. People are like, whoa, how many did you get any mediators? Anyone? Oh, yeah, they want to do this. We've got something like 25 people being trained today. And there's people from Green Bay. There's people from the northern counties. So we'll be able to help out up there as well as here in Milwaukee. So our clerks, when they see this, they're going to be tracking, they're going to be looking for the certificate of readiness for mediation. That's what they're looking for. They see that filed, boom, they go to the list of mediators and they pick one out. Now that mediator, they file a notice of appointment of the mediator. The clerk will generate that document. It's signed, it's signed by the clerk. It's put in CM, so as an electronic filer, you'll know about it. Lender will know about it. It'll get mailed out to the mediator. The mediator will now call debtor's counsel and lender's counsel and set up the mediation session. The mediator will have a calendar that's, again, been created by our great folks in the clerk's office, a Google calendar, they call it. And it will have all the dates that the room is available for mediation. Okay? It's going to be held in the Pro Se Help Desk room. Some of you that have never volunteered there will get a chance to see it, how nice it is, and then you'll come back and volunteer at the Pro Se Help Desk. The idea will be that the debtor and counsel perhaps the lender's counsel, if they're local, would be coming in person to that room. The servicer representative will be on the telephone. This is how they do it at Marquette. This is what works very well. With respect to the northern counties, we have Judge Griesbach's jury room, and in if that is not available, we have an alternate room in his office available. We have Tom King graciously allowing us to use his office in Oshkosh. So if a debtor is in Green Bay, the debtor and debtor's counsel can go to Green Bay to Judge Griesbach. We will hook you up by video. And Jay Pittner or Scott Nabke or Penny Gentius, whoever the lender's counsel from Milwaukee, does not have to drive up there to have a mediation. They can come here and be on by video with you. See how well it works. Right? We are going to have some Green Bay mediators. It's possible the mediator will be up in Green Bay. If all the lawyers are up in Green Bay, you won't even need the video. You can just do it up there. We've made the facilities, but we've got the video hookup ready.
So you've got your mediator contacts. You have the date set up. Scott, any comments as far as mediation? I think.
Oh, when do you pay the money?
Once the mediator is appointed, she requires the payment within
14. I think it's 14 days
right.
Before
the
mediation.
The date is going to be. We went around with this. When do they pay the money? And it goes right to the mediator, not to the court. God forbid. Like, if the government would shut down, what would I do with all that money? That's kind of the reasoning that we had to think about. Not to the court, not to the Chapter 13 trustee, leave them out of it. You pay your $125 each, debtor and lender, right to the mediator. That gives the mediator some compensation for doing this, some incentive to keep everybody on the ball, and to make sure that we have, if not a successful modification, at least a successful mediation, where people are there, they're trying, they're seeing what can be done here. So that's why that was put in. It's not uncommon. It's not the lowest price that you'll see for one of these programs. It's not the highest. But we want people who are serious about it on both sides. So both sides are going to pay this right to our mediator.
A couple of comments as far as preparing your clients for mediation. How are we doing that time?
Okay.
What they're going to usually open with, you're going to get everybody at the table. The mediator's going to sit down and walk through the rules of mediation. Prep your client's going to take a few minutes. I think we're going to have some of the standard consent forms. You know, we can't sue the mediators. They can't be subpoenaed to testify in disputes and all those type of good standard disclosures. They're going to usually ask your client to open with their statement of their hardship. How did they get here? What's kind of the story behind what led up to today? Prep them for that. Otherwise, they're just going to kind of sit there and say, well, times are hard. Give the lender some details. They've asked for them. Again, it's part of the good faith elements in participating. The mediation is usually going to involve a lot of document review between counsel and attorney and the servicer over the phone. Prep the client to hang in there. They're going to feel frustrated that they're answering the same questions they've answered 5,000 times. You're going to feel frustrated about why, you know, they're stating, why did you lose the tax returns 8 times? Don't let your clients vent on the servicer over the phone. It's not the time and the place for it. Rein them in. Prep them to come in good faith and with a good attitude to negotiate. Scott, any comments?
I don't know how many people have done a state court foreclosure mediation, but, I mean, you're looking at usually about hours, hour and a half. It's usually an average mediation. It is, from the servicer standpoint, they'll be going over usually income and expenses with the borrower to just, you know, verify and confirm what's been supplied. I mean, because it happens a lot in foreclosure mediation, the financials that are supplied, there's still changes. Oh, my cable bill is $50 less now. I don't get the overtime
really?
Now.
Why do you get that? Because mine is like $50 more.
Yeah. But, you know, so there's usually always changes. So even though you've just supplied those documents to creditors' counsel, you know, maybe 3 weeks ago, there still may be changes. So that's why the servicer is still going to ask the debtor to verify, you know, what's been supplied. So, I mean, a lot of the mediation is going over that, making sure there's a clear income and expense picture. A typical mediation, there will be some kind of hold time. They'll have verified that, and then the servicer is basically running numbers. They're taking all that, running it through their models or whatever to see, you know, is it going to qualify for HAMP? If HAMP is a no, what else can we get them qualified for, if anything?
And they're doing that right during the mediation?
In perfect situations, yes. Now, you know, there have been state court ones that have gone better or worse than others. Again, sometimes they do get continued. I've had cases where I've gone to 2 or 3 sessions. That's not ideal for anybody, don't get me wrong. I don't want to go 2-3 times on the same case. Nobody does. Obviously, with this program, I think just as a whole, there are going to be some, you know, wrinkles in the system to iron out. I mean, we're going to just have to kind of see how it goes. There may be changes we have to make, but I guess everybody on both sides, you know, let's be patient, you know, and try to get this to work. Because, like, you know, there may be some things that come up that we're going to have to deal with. You know, but, you know, servicers aren't perfect, you know, and know, debtors aren't perfect either. So I mean, it, you know, every mediation is different, but you know, that having authority to settle comes up now and then, where you know, the servicer, there's an underlying investor, and they need the okay from Freddie Mac before the servicer can say yes, and nuances like that. Obviously, from our perspective, you know, we're going to do our best to educate, you know, the servicers, you know, that this is how this program works. This is how we'd like to mediation to go. I mean, this happens in state court all the time. We do have, you know, semi-regular meetings with Deb Tuttle of the Marquette program, so, you know, to try to iron out problems. So, it's kind of a fluid situation. There'll be things that need to be fixed, but everybody, I guess, hang in there, and everyone will try to do their best.
So assuming we get the modification agreed to, whether it's hopefully at this first mediation session, and it doesn't require a second one, but if worse comes to worse, we got a second one, and then it gets agreed to at that time. One thing to note is at least the idea of the program is it's for a permanent modification. This is not supposed to get us to a, what do you call it?
Trial.
And then in 3 months they say, well, no, never mind, or give us some more documents. I mean, they might, some of their underwriting might require a 3-month trial or something, but the idea is got to be if they make the trial payments, then it gets permanently modified without any more hullabaloo. I think that might be an appropriate response, but the idea is, and we've written it in here so that hopefully the lenders get it, that with this doomsday provision, with the adequate protection payments, and with everything else, they hopefully will not say, okay, we'll let you try it for 3 months, and then we'll have to come back here and do it all again. If there is any sort of a trial, it should only be the kind of trial that, as long as they make the payments, it becomes permanent in 3 months. That would be great. It shouldn't be the kind of trial that they maybe have worked out outside of court where they do the trial and then the lender says, okay, now give me a bunch of more documents and we'll start the whole nonsense up again. But at any rate, assuming that it gets to an agreed upon loan modification, the judges have agreed we will approve them. We will not question what provision of the bankruptcy code requires us to approve these. We will just approve them. We are happy. This is what we want to do. We want to get people to this place, and so we will approve them. So you just file a motion or a stipulation or whatever you will, and we will approve that. You will then have, again, be living. The debtor will be living under a doomsday, so that hopefully in 2 or 3 months, we're not back here with a motion for relief from stay saying, hey, they just defaulted on the modified payment. If something happens that they have to default on the modified payment, we aren't going to delay the lender from exercising the rights. Again, they're agreeing, they're stipulating right up front that if they get a modification, they will have a doomsday for 1 year, not for the whole time, which some people argued for, 1 year on the modified payments. The other thing, again, this was from the debtor's side, debtor's counsel's side, that the debtors are agreeing to, and we cannot, of course we can't enforce this, but we want you to talk to your clients about it. Agreeing not to dismiss the Chapter 13 for 9 months after the successful modification. The idea is, the concern was that if the program is wildly successful, which we hope it is, that a lot of people who have been stuck in the red tape will come in, get their modification, and then after the lawyer spent a lot of time and effort to get them there, will go, sayonara, I have the absolute right to dismiss my Chapter 13 case, and out they'll go. This is not a good idea. Well, of course it's not good for the bankruptcy lawyer, the debtor's lawyer. Of course not. But it's not good for the debtor either. We found out from talking to the folks in Florida, it takes at least 9 months for these servicers to correct their records and get with the program. And if the debtor dismisses the case and is making their modified loan payments on their own out there, All of a sudden the lender says, what's this payment? This isn't right. They're in default. I'll put this in suspense. And 3 months later, they send him another foreclosure. And the debtor now has nowhere to go. If the debtor's still in Chapter 13, they've got somewhere to go. Not that I especially want to see a lot of these, but at least I'm here. They can come here and say, Judge, I modified my mortgage, and now they're sending me and saying I'm in default, and I'm not in default. So, for really the reason that we don't want to kick them out in the cold, given the frailties, if you will, of the mortgage servicer's computer systems, and we want to compensate debtors' lawyers for the extra work that we know is going to be involved in getting somebody through this process, we have added this provision that they're agreeing they will not dismiss their case voluntarily for 9 months after a successful modification. Now, if something comes up, there's just some reason they shouldn't be in Chapter 13. I mean, obviously, they should be able to do so. And if they don't make their plan payments and the trustee moves to dismiss them, we're not going to say, no, they're staying in because, you know, they've agreed to this. But that's the thought behind it. It's good for the lawyer. It's good for the debtor. And we hope that you guys understand why we put that in. The other thing I want to mention is if you don't have the successful modification, you go to the mediation, it's just not going to work. And I have not sat in one, and I don't know the reasons why, but I can surmise it's the income just isn't there or that mortgage is just too high. But it's not going to work. Well, what happens then? The mediator is going to file a report. The mediator is going to file a report, and it'll say mediation was not successful. There was no loan modification agreed on. That is going to trigger a status conference with the judge. And at that status conference, one of three things can happen. One, if the reason that, and again, we're trying to make this program go quickly, so we are looking for the mediator report within 60 days after the mediator's been appointed. So if that mediator were appointed, you know, in June, by August, we want to see it done. We don't want this thing to be a long, dragged-out thing. So 60 days, the mediator files a report and says, it worked. Now we're looking for your motion, your stipulation, and we'll have your doomsday, and everybody lives happily ever after. But 60 days, the mediator says, didn't work. Status conference, one of three things. One, do you need more time? Maybe 60 days just wasn't enough in your particular case or with your particular lender. If you need more time, we can give you more time. Two, this thing is dead on arrival. This is never going to work. This is, well, I don't know why we thought it might. It's not going to work. The stay is lifted. Send me an order. Debtors agreeing to that when they get into the program. The third thing is we give the debtor a short period of time, 14 days, to come up with the traditional Chapter 13 plan, the old curing the arrearage, the pre-petition arrearage, and going back and making the, and hopefully you're not so far along that it won't be feasible anymore. Again, if this thing goes 60, 90 days, you know, we see 90-day, 3-month post-petition arrearages getting added all the time, and they hopefully will have been making their adequate protection payments, so it shouldn't be so bad. So are you with me on that? That's the three possible results of an unsuccessful mediation. More time, try it again. Stay is lifted immediately because this is not going to work no matter what, or debtor gets the opportunity to propose a traditional plan. If that traditional plan is not proposed within 14 days, you're getting the theme here, affidavit of default, the stay is lifted. You're not kicked out of Chapter 13, but you're no longer, that creditor is no longer stayed. Yep.
What do we do about the plan in the meantime?
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up before we were done. I think when you file your original plan, you need to I guess, put it in special provisions or maybe at paragraphs, at provision 6 where it talks about the mortgage, put some kind of statement in there that you're going to file a motion under the mediation program. Obviously, as creditors counsel, I've seen a few dozen different versions of we are not going to pay the arrears in this plan because we're going to take 2.5 years and maybe modify it, maybe not, and obviously we're objecting to all these, and courts are dealing with all these objections, and that's part of the reason for this program is the courts don't want to have to deal with me having to object to every one of these plans because of these provisions. So if you put in there that you were going to request the mediation, then I don't need to object. You know, now my client might not agree to mediate, but I don't need to object to the plan right off the bat. But if I'm still getting a plan that says we're not going to pay the arrears and it just talks about modification just in general, I think I still have to object to that because it's not paying the arrears under the code and it's not doing this either.
So we deal with all the other creditors or issues with respect to unsecured creditors
absolutely.
The same as though?
Same as, yeah. And you just simply are putting a special provision for this mortgage, or if you've got two of them, I understand sometimes there are two, that's how you're going to treat it. You're going to treat it under the triple M. And, you know, if you do that and then don't come up with the motion, you're also going to, the trustee is going to be on you because they'll be watching that. Again, we're trying to make this a quick program with bennies for both sides. And, you know, we're not going to change the model plan or anything. We're just going to say put it in as a special provision.
And I've already seen a couple plans.
Is there a time limit? I thought there was a time limit for when they had to file the motion after they filed the plan.
I'm not sure that we, Mary says, is there a time limit? You file your case, you file your plan. Is there a time limit for getting that motion in? I'm not sure we came up with one specifically, Mary, but certainly within a very quick, reasonable time. I mean, if this is what you're trying to do with your mortgage, how long should it take?
Is there an example language on the website for the special provision? Because there should be some alternatives in there, too, that, you know, the debtor is going to file a motion for modification, but then if the debtor doesn't and Scott has not objected to that plan, that's
going to
be in the language.
Todd, what
I think when we discussed this, the resolution was that if the motion wasn't filed timely, or if the motion wasn't filed timely, that there be a traditional motion for relief from stay filed because the creditor wasn't receiving payments. In terms of the language in the special provision, I think that we leaned in favor of very general, brief statement that the mortgage of XYZ Bank is going to be treated through the mortgage modification plan, and leave it at that. Don't try and put all your proposed payments in and when the payments we made and the dollar amounts and all that, because that's going to draw an objection to confirmation of the plan. We're anticipating that the plans will be confirmed while the mediation is pending. The trustees aren't going to hold up confirmation of the plan and disbursement to other creditors because of the mediation. So there was concern by the lenders that if you're too specific about what your proposal is going to be as to how you're going to treat that claim through the mediation, then they're going to have to object to confirmation of the plan because they don't want to be bound by those terms. So just a very general statement. Frankly, I think for purposes of plan calculation and the language in the plan, those of you who use best case, you might check on the box not in plan instead of long-term debt paid outside plan. And the reason for that is because that provision, what is it, 6B or whatever, secured claims, or claims secured by real estate, includes a provision that says, okay, this creditor is going to be paid this amount per month outside the plan. And we aren't trying to cram down on that. We're not trying to force that creditor to accept any new amount. So click on not in plan, put in special provisions, debt treated through the MMM program, and leave it alone. Then file your motion and deal with those terms separately.
Judge Kelly, you had spoke earlier about the possibility of the mortgage companies doing the trial period for X number of months and then possibly coming back and reneging. Is there going to be any sort of relief for the debtor in the bankruptcy court if they follow everything that the mortgage company had asked them to do in the mediation.
Yes, I guess necessary. I mean, I would hope that it wouldn't get to that, but clearly by this consent that they are filing, the lender is agreeing to act in good faith and to send somebody with authority. And if they won't do that, then yes, I think that there would be recourse.
All right.
I hope that doesn't have to come to that.
Refuse
to lift the stay. Judge McGarity is...
And I think we should see the 3 months to a minimum, because if it's a Fannie or a Freddie loan, which the vast bulk of these are, there's a provision that allows them to basically accelerate through that three-month trial period if they're in a bankruptcy. Whereas traditionally you have to say, well, you've got to make one, two, and three. They can bypass that and go straight to a final. Getting the servicer to understand that, that's a whole other argument. But at least it's there, and it's a tool that we can try to use.
Is it Is this program going to be available to cases that are already filed?
Yes, absolutely. The idea is, if this is what you want to do, you would file an amended plan and file your motion.
Okay.
What do you think, Ted?
Well, it's a good question. First of all, let's see if the program works. And before we start, you know, combing through all of our existing files to reevaluate the case and determine whether or not they would be a good candidate for the mediation program. I guess that's how we're going to handle it. Yeah, absolutely, there might be appropriate cases that where the client would have been a good candidate for mediation, but we didn't go that route because it wasn't available. So I guess we're going to handle it on a as-needed basis.
And then there's also the risk of you have the conventional Chapter 13 or you have this mediation, and you take your client the direction of the mediation, and then upon filing, they have this doomsday, whereas if they would have done the conventional
Jamie,
waivers.
Make sure the client understands up front what they're agreeing to. This is absolutely, that is the quid pro quo. You participate in this program, you're giving up something. That was negotiated. A lot of discussion about how much the debtor would be giving up. Make sure they understand up front. Have them sign an acknowledgement. I know what I'm getting into. I know what my rights would be under one option, and I understand what I'm giving up and what my rights are going to be and my obligations under this second option.
I guess I'm missing something. Isn't there a doomsday involved?
There is, but what Jamie's pointing out, and I don't mean to misstate what you're saying, but look, under the traditional Chapter 13, you always have that second kick at the cap. You know, if there's a default.
Well, if you miss your first two mortgage payments right out the gate, we have to file a motion for relief, and
then you get a doomsday.
There's a decent chance that's going to result in a doomsday, and they've got another chance. Whereas if you do the modification program, they miss those first two out of the gate, affidavit default stay relief. So you're right. They, you know, it's a risk the debtors would be taking.
Yeah, the other thing as a practice tip that you guys have to work through is that if you're setting up your budget on Schedule J based on your projected modified payment, and this doesn't work out, you're going to be in a fix because your payment doesn't work anymore, and you've set up everything based on this anticipation that you're not including mortgage arrears in the plan, and so your calculation of your plan is going to be different, your budget's different, what the clients have as disposable income is different, so give that some thought as well when you're calculating your plan and setting up feasibility issues.
Well, I get, you know, as a minimum, I mean, every modification that I've seen at a mediation in state court, you know, it results in the mortgage being current. Now, I've seen some where the mortgage payment goes down. I've seen some where the mortgage payment actually went up a little bit because they were so far behind, and even extending the term out and lowering interest rate, just the amount that had to be paid simply, you know, it had to go up. But it brings them current. So I guess that, you know, that's the minimum expectation, so that if they go through this program, they succeed, you know, they get a modification. If they do get dismissed out of the 13 for not paying the trustee or whatever other reasons, at least they, in theory, come out of the 13 with a current mortgage. They might have other problems, but they've got a mortgage that's current and they're not in foreclosure anymore. So I guess that would be the, you know, the bare minimum. But like I said, payments won't necessarily go down. You know, they may not. But it, it, you know, I guess from, you know, it brings them current. I went to a mediation last week that was successful. They didn't qualify for HAMP, but they did qualify for a modification. Again, I, their payment stayed relatively the same. The adjustable rate note that they had actually stayed an adjustable rate. You know, most of the original note terms stayed the same, but, you know, it, I don't know if they're going to take the deal or not, but it brings them current. And I don't know. I guess I always figure it's better to be current and not in foreclosure than, you know, the alternative. But I guess that's the best way I can answer that question.
Are you seeing any modifications to include balances being brought down to the values of the property?
Honestly, I really haven't. I don't know about Jay's office and the mediations they've gone to, but most of the modifications I see is that they're rolling what's behind, they're recapitalizing it and bringing it current. Maybe that the you know, I have seen interest rates come down, but I haven't really seen personally much in the way of, you know, forgiveness of balance.
I've seen,
I personally haven't.
I've seen one, and it was a very, very odd one. I don't know how they pulled it off or why, but after 5 years, they were getting a waiver of $50,000 or $60,000 off the principal balance. But one-time deal, I have no idea. There was no statutory basis for it.
I guess I would say, what better context is there for a mortgage modification than under Chapter 13 as opposed to in the state court when you're dealing with your client's complete financial situation? And they're not going to have any better opportunity for a modification outside of Chapter 13 than they are inside of Chapter 13. And when the range of options that are available with modifications to get out of an ARM or for permanent, to reduce interest rates, to make the home affordable, I guess I don't see why this opportunity isn't the best one that you can present to your client.
Okay, we've gone past our time. Some of the if you have some more questions, maybe some of our presenters and Todd would stick around and talk to you about it. I hope you'll try it. I hope you'll like it. I hope you'll make suggestions. If it doesn't seem to be working, it's brand new. We want it to be the best it can be, so we look forward to your comments and your suggestions about it. Thanks very much.